You don't live near the Stennis Space Center, do you?
I do. I do. I heard the rocket test a few days ago. That was very
Oh
exciting.
yeah. One of our guys, Gunn, he does the Taking the Over show on our podcast feed. He lives out there, and yeah, he actually had tried to get media credentials to cover the launch or the test,
Oh,
and
cool.
they denied him.
What's up, Hoodat Nation, and welcome to the Dome Patrol United podcast.
What's up, Hoodat Nation, and thanks for joining us on the Dome Patrol Podcast United Network. I am your host, Jeff, and I'm not drunk, but I'm actually drinking my new thing. Instead of the squirts and vodka, is I'm drinking these Truly lemonades. Not the Truly regulars, but they've got to be Truly lemonades. Which I think I think I found that I'm allergic to beer now, because every time I drink beer, I end up waking up at about 3 a.m. with anxiety and heart palpitations, even if I have one beer. But Truly, I can drink. That's age and overweight. Anyway, all right. It's been a relatively quiet week for the Saints front office this week, at least compared to the last few weeks. So much, in fact, that Saints Twitter decided to have a bracket challenge. And we weren't included in that, except for Dave, BS and Beer, at BS and Beer. He was actually included. I think he was knocked out in the first round. But the Dome Patrol PCast Twitter account was not, so I'll have to take that up with Joe Horn's cell phone. Either that, or we're going to have to start getting a little more active on Twitter. But we're not going to talk about that this week. Instead, we're going to take a look at what the rest of the Saints season or off-season strategy ought to be. And we have a special guest with us here to share his expert opinion on that. So put your seatbelts on, keep your hands and legs inside your earbuds at all times, and enjoy the show. Jason's not here. Our expert guest will be replacing him. Scott, welcome to the show. We'll get to the guest in a minute. What are you drinking? What's your number?
I'm drinking some Michelob Ultra.
As is, of course, the tradition.
And I guess I'm working on a one. Working on a one.
Yeah. So. All right. And our special guest for tonight, welcome. He is the managing editor of USA Today's Saints Wire, John Sigler. John, welcome to the show. Are you drinking, and do you have a number?
Hey, thanks, guys. Appreciate you having me on. And yeah, I'm riding steady at a one. It's a school night. Got to dot my T's and cross my I's. And we've got this new brewery over in Biloxi called Fly Llama, and I'm trying their Fly Lager with two L's. It's nice. It's light. It's kind of hazy. Not too bad. Good spring and summer beer, I think. I think I'm going to have a lot of these poolside here in a couple months. So
very
looking
nice.
Forward to that.
Now, is Fly have the two L's, or does Lager have the two L's?
Lager has the two L's, and their mascot is a llama with you know, like the old fashioned the Snoopy scarf. They're flying behind it, so it's pretty cute, kind of kitschy.
Okay.
Very nice. It's a nice
believe
addition.
I believe they call that a Jager.
Jager.
Drinking before you go yogging.
Yeah, you gotta keep that in my back pocket, man. I like that.
You sound like you have that Mississippi or kind of Louisiana accent. Now, are you a native of the Gulf Coast region? Where'd you grow up?
We're coasties, man. And yeah, I live out here outside of Gulfport, Mississippi. We're really closer to Long Beach, if anybody knows the specific geography over here. But I live far enough inland where my accent can kind of fly all over the place. So it's a good time, but it's close enough to the city where I can get to New Orleans every now and then. And not with COVID going on now, but I have been able to make the trip fairly easy in the past, and looking forward to getting over there again here in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. And then you've been a Saints fan all your life then, right?
Pretty much. Yeah. We didn't have more than one TV until after the storm, after Katrina. We were able to afford the second one, and that's when I really started watching Saints games. Growing up, Dad ran the TV, and he's never been really too big into football, so we didn't watch a whole lot of it growing up. I knew the main players. I knew who Deuce McAllister was, obviously, when Ole Miss legend. Aaron Brooks was my first favorite player somehow, sadly.
I'm sorry.
Hey, thanks turned around quick. And I appreciate, to this day, I will say that Aaron Brooks is the second best QB in Saints history. But that's a whole other can of worms,
that
whole other conversation
debate.
To get
that
into.
That is a debate that we will have when Jason – you got to have Jason in here. He's our Aaron Brooks supporter. But
awesome. Man, I caught some heat. We did a big so Saints Wire is part of USA Today Sports Media Group's larger Wire network. And last summer, we ran the series of the top 100 players in each team's history. And I took a lot of heat because I had Aaron Brooks as my number two quarterback, ahead of Archie Manning, ahead of the Billy Joes and everybody else.
Ahead of Bobby,
they're behind Breeze. Yeah, both of them. Yeah.
Now, what did you based it off of raw talent, and that's it? Athletic ability,
career accomplishments. I tried to look at things relative to the era they played in, and Aaron, he had some high flying seasons there. He played pretty well. So I would love to wax poetic about Aaron Brooks and the cleanest sneakers I've ever seen on the Superdome turf with Jason sometime in the future.
I like that. We're gonna do that. We're gonna have an Aaron Brooks only pod, or at least an Aaron Brooks versus everybody else debate podcast. And I bet, because you probably did more research in order to come to that conclusion, so I would imagine you have some stats to back that up with. And again, absolutely. There's the old debate. It's the quarterback gets the blame for the loss and the spoils of victories, but there is a whole team around them that has to play. So maybe their poor records was more to do with the fact that they had a shitty team around them.
So. That too. I mean, the backward passes didn't help, but.
All right. So you started becoming a Saints fan around that time then, right? 99, 2000, 2001-ish. Is that accurate?
A little bit. I was young at the time. I was 7 or 8 at the time. So I would catch a game when we were at like my cousin's place on the Sunday after church, stuff like that. So I didn't get really heavy into the Saints until after Katrina, when I got my own TV and then I could watch the Saints every Sunday. I'm on the younger side, younger scale of a lot of the people who cover the team these days, having come up in the Breeze Peyton era. So a lot of my analysis is skewed towards that because of the expectations those guys have set. I'll run across a stat like 75% of the Saints playoff games have happened over the last 15 years. And I just have to take a step back and really appreciate just what they've accomplished and where we're at now.
Yeah, absolutely. So then what led you to become a sports writer, right? And that career path that led you to the current role of managing editor for Saints Wire.
Yeah. So I was going to USM at their campus in Long Beach, the Gulfport campus, Southern Miss to the top. And I went to school to be a high school history teacher. And I was going insane because all I was doing was churning out these 15-page academic papers about, the World War II and the Civil War and, all these just really dry topics, and it was driving me crazy. So I started watching some football, trying to just have some kind of a distraction on the weekends from it. And I started having lots of thoughts, picking up things from the game. So I started some little blog. I think it was on Blogspot. And I started sharing my articles on Twitter. Didn't have any kind of a following, but somebody saw it and they were impressed by it. So they said, "Hey, would you like to make some money doing this?" And I was like, "Yeah." And they said, "Okay, we'll pay you 10 cents for every 10,000 views you generate," or something crazy like that.
And I thought you said I was going to make money.
Exactly. That's what I said at the time. But I was like, "Well, it beats frying tortilla shells at the Taco Sombrero in Gulfport, so I'll take it." And I kind of climbed the ladder ever since then. I jumped from that little network, whatever it was, to Fansided, the Saints managing editor at Fansided at the time, John Hendricks, brought me with his crew over to SB Nation when he made the jump. And I've kind of climbed the ladder there from one network to the next, and I'm at USA Today managing my own site.
Very cool.
Doing this for a living, and you know, it's kind of crazy for something that was, you know, a part-time hobby, has been able to put food on my daughter's plate. But you know, I'm very, very fortunate to be in this position and have a lot of people to thank for that.
That's pretty awesome. So that, yeah. So then, you know, yeah, John Hendricks, another big voice on Twitter, Saints Twitter.
Yeah, man, that's John number one. in all the group chats we've ever had, I've deferred to him as John number one. I'll be John number 42 or whatever it is. Saints Twitter is lousy with it, with us Johns out here. But Hendricks is forever John number one in my book, and very, very thankful for the part that he's played to put me in the position I am now.
That's pretty cool. I like that. I like, now that I know the relationship there, I'll kind of pay attention to how you guys interact on Twitter, probably retweeting each other's stuff and helping each other
out. Yeah, Hendricks keeps it much more straight laced than I do. I will give him some props there. So definitely respect his grind and what he's accomplished, and kind of looking to chase his success every now and then.
Yeah, no, but you're right. I have noticed that you have a lot of fun with your Twitter account, and I think that's kind of what at least draws us to you. You know, it's good stuff, but it's all, you also kind of let loose a little bit. Real quick, I want to ask, like, so how, as a writer, because you know we're broadcast, and you being in sports journalism writing, how is it that, how often do you come up with a piece as managing editor versus writer, and how long does it take you maybe to research and write the piece, and like how fast do you have to turn things around?
Oh man, so our model with the Wire Network is to be the best first analysis. Now, that doesn't mean being the first to the finish line. It means being one of the first to get there and doing a good job. So I'm constantly in a time crunch to check my numbers, check my stats, find film analysis to back up what I'm saying. So, you know, my workday starts at 7:30, 8 o'clock as soon as I get back from taking my kid to school. And it normally wraps her up around 4 or 5 in the afternoon. So in this time of year with free agency, I'm around the clock. So, but you know, for a typical post, like Eli Apple today signing with the Bengals, we're recording this on Tuesday for the viewers at home. So that news breaks at about 2 o'clock in the afternoon, I believe. So I jump on Pro Football Reference. I look through to see how often Eli played last year, who he's been with, what's happened since the last time we saw him. And then I go and I look at the Bengals roster and look and see, okay, who are his former teammates there? Oh, there's a bunch of Saints here that, you know, they've got Von Bell. They've got Trey Hendrickson. They tried to get Sheldon Rankins. And so there's a lot of connective tissue there, and that's how my angle would be to approach that. And so
right. I think you did say something like Cincinnati's doing it again, like pretty much like gobbling up former Saints.
Yeah, you know, it worked so well for the Panthers last year. I guess they're giving it a run themselves. So good luck to them. Bless their hearts. Joey Burrow deserves better. But anyway,
Scott's favorite player in the NFL.
Oh, man, I can't blame him. I'm staring at a Joe Burrow prayer candle I got as a Secret Santa gift a few years ago from the what are they now? They were Banner Society. Now it's the Moon Crew community. They do a Secret Santa every December, and I got a Joe Burrow prayer candle and a Michael Thomas prayer candle. So I've got the two of those at my work desk.
Nice.
Yeah. So, but to circle back to the Eli Apple Bengals example, from start to finish, that was about a 20-25 minute process for me, and a large part of that is doing my fact checking, making sure I've got everything correct. And you know, I thought, okay, Eli had a good game against the Bengals a couple of years ago. Let's go back and look at that. And oh, that was his first game. That was his first interception wearing black and gold. Happened in that game off of Andy Dalton. So that's another tidbit I can throw in there. Mm-hmm.
That's fascinating to me that you're finding this stuff quick, right? That's fast as you're finding it. I mean, it would take me forever to even think of that. Right. And then also to then go find the stat itself. I mean,
exactly. And yeah. And I think that's being able to move quickly and keep this stuff on the back burner. That's really helped me get to where I am now. And a lot of that, you know, I went to school to be a history teacher. That didn't pan out, but a lot of the skills I picked up has really translated to what I'm doing now, where probably 90% of the work I did in college was research. And that was going through databases. That was going, that was making records requests. That was going through, I remember, do you remember the Tampa Bay Buccaneers game where Joe Morgan had like 67-yard touchdown catch where he shrugged off a tackle and kind of like limped into the end zone?
I don't remember like
2014,
a lot of things,
but... 2013. Okay, well, I remember that because at the time I had that going on my laptop. It was a Sunday. I was alone at the the Cook Library, and I was working a microfiche machine looking at copies of the London Times from 1864 or 63, excuse me. And so I'm working this antique records device, going through looking for these war dispatches on one screen, and I've got Joe Morgan scoring a touchdown on the other, and. You know, just having that experience of being able to navigate these databases, find my information, knowing what I'm looking for, knowing where to get it, that's translated. And that I use these skills every day. I couldn't tell you how many spreadsheets I've got open right now.
Wow. That is something. Because I always wondered if you guys in the professional sports journalism world had access to database or information that we don't. You know what I mean? Like you have some kind of, so even if it's a subscription service, I guess, that you might have access to, just that
there is,
fits
so
out things.
And so NFL Media has its own set of tools, but a lot of that stuff you can find in more accessible at places like Pro Football Reference. I use them daily. They're great. They're great.
That's usually where I get my stats from, and then I start to read stuff, and then Jason's usually like, okay, Jeff, we don't need to hear all the list of 75 running backs that are free agents this year or something.
Well, it gets difficult because if you get too deep in the weeds, it sounds like you're speaking in binary code to people. I mean, you just got to be very careful with how many numbers you're throwing around.
Well, it's also, like, when you do talk about stuff, if I chase this squirrel real quick, I mean, I will say, like, when you look, this specific story, even like if I'm looking on wherever I'm looking and I'm listing out that here's all the free agent, I think it was linebackers at the time, because we're talking about replacing Quan, right? And I don't know, it's kind of like, if it's not the big celebrity name, then nobody wants to hear about it, you know what I mean? Rather than like, but or like this guy's like statistically could be a good fit, you know, and it's how do you almost have to sell that person, right? If you're going to try and recommend something, or do you find there's like a pressure to always talk about like Jadeveon Clowney or something if you're talking about the linemen or something?
Yeah, early on when I started in this role, there was like an inclination of, okay, so how many big fish can I name? Ndamukong Suh, Earl Thomas.
That's SEO, right?
Yeah. And over time, I've cultivated such a strong SEO network and system to where I don't really need to go, you know, I don't call that clickbait, but that, I mean, essentially that is the goal to an extent. I don't have to chase that rabbit anymore. Now I can put together I did a post a few weeks ago, a list of sleeper free agents that the Saints could consider. Now, some of those guys got paid a lot more than I expected, like Jonnu Smith. but other names on that list, that you're talking about guys like, Tyus Bowser, the linebacker defensive end with the Ravens, who, you know, he didn't get paid top dollar, but he's a very effective player, and he's someone I would have loved to see in black and gold, but instead he's staying in Baltimore, and I expect he's going to continue to be effective for them, especially when you look at the losses that they've had with Matthew Judon and Yannick Ngakoue moving on to other teams. And so, especially now when the Saints are in a cap crunch, you don't want to say that, oh, they could go get Richard Sherman, but at the same time, they're trying to get Richard Sherman. So, so it's a really complicated situation to navigate, and you kind of have to pick and choose. Like, okay, do I want to get people's hopes up here, or do I want to try and like accurately reflect what the team is doing? I kind of chase, you know, I love that phrase, chase the squirrel. I love that phrase. I did that a bit today. Because I was looking back at the only move the Saints have made is signing a fullback to the league minimum, and that's Alex Arma. And I was looking at that, and I looked at the timing of it, and that happened like minutes into the signing period when it kicked off. And I'm like, why did they move so quickly to get a fullback? Like, this wouldn't be my first option. So who would be my first option? Kyle Juszczyk, who we saw that came down to the wire with San Francisco. And so I'm thinking, okay, maybe Juszczyk was on New Orleans' radar because he would make sense as, like, your upgraded Josh Hill move piece, right? And so
if they didn't go after him, like, when they, you know, because if they didn't go after him, is it possible that they, in the reality of situations, like, they maybe gave him a phone call or something? I mean, how do you, like, you said, like, they went and signed fullback right out the gate, and that was it.
Mm-hmm. Right. And to me, no disrespect to Alex Arma. He's a, you know, my coach at USM, Will Hall, he's a huge Alex Arma fan, apparently, when they were at West Georgia together. Alex Arma, to me, is not a plan A free agent target. He's a plan B in case the guy you really want is unavailable. And that's what happened with Juszczyk, is the 49ers were able to sign him to an extension the day before this legal tampering negotiating window kicked off. So there's an element of tinfoil hat at play here with me, thinking, kind of following this plot line a bit. But to me, it seemed the writing on the wall would suggest the Saints had a bigger target in mind that was unavailable, so they immediately moved to their plan B, which, if you look back a couple of years ago, when Mark Ingram left New Orleans, Mark was plan A, and his agent botched the situation, and they had to move to plan B, or they're going to lose Latavius Murray, so they did. And so, to me, that might be like an echo of that situation, kind of. Mm-hmm. It's not totally the same circumstances. It wasn't a case of them trying to retain their own player. It was a case of them looking for an upgrade, that being unavailable, so they moved to the next best option.
Right. You'd be damned if you lose your second option.
Exactly. Now you could do worse than go back to Michael Burton, but Mike Burton is not going to get the edge that someone who is athletically gifted as Alex Arma is, you know, much less someone as athletically gifted as Kyle Juszczyk would potentially bring. You know, credit to the 49ers for working that deal out and getting it done, you know, hours before the deadline when the Saints would have had an opportunity to possibly jump in there. Now, there were no reports that the Saints were interested in Juice. There was nothing linking them there. This is just a case of me kind of post-mortem is the word.
Kind of read between them.
That's kind of, Yeah, read the tea leaves, maybe. You know, that's certainly less dark than the post-mortem.
That's the stuff I like, because we talk about that kind of stuff all the time, how you have the sensationalized, or you have the headlines, and you have the storylines as they are when things happen, and people believe or want to believe, you know, all this big stuff. And then if you really look past things, or, you know, I think people criticize maybe even the front office for making the decisions that they make. And it's kind of like, I mean, clearly that might not have been their first option. They're dealing with reality. There's 32 other teams, you know, there's salary cap is in play as well.
That was my question. Like, where were they salary cap wise when they made that, you know, when they pulled the trigger on that? They might have not, you know, I don't know what moves they were making at the time. They might have not had the money to go after somebody bigger. I don't know.
Yeah. I think that's a totally valid point to throw in here. As I recall, at the time that was right around the time when Armstead's restructure was being reported as happening. I think mm-hmm. I believe that was on Saturday, was when it was reported. Yeah, it was Saturday morning that they reported Armstead had agreed to a restructure. We didn't know the exact numbers at the time, though. And that's what's interesting to me, is the exact numbers on that restructure didn't come out for a few days. And I believe the GOAT himself, Nick Underhill at New Orleans Stuff Football, reported here Tuesday morning the exact figures of exactly which levers the Saints pulled to restructure Armstead's contract. And so that ambiguity, that doesn't always happen in these situations where, you know, think back to when Cam Jordan and Demario Davis restructured their deals. We knew exactly what happened that day. We knew exactly how much money they saved, and we knew exactly how much cap space it created. That wasn't the case with Armstead. And so that leads me to think that maybe he agreed to restructure the deal, and the Saints were looking at how much they wanted to spend, how much they needed to spend to potentially shuffle his money around so that they could create more space, possibly to go after a big fish like Juszczyk. Now, again, this is me putting on the tinfoil hat. And
we love that stuff.
And it's all in retrospect. I do too, man. This is what's fun to me. You know, stuff like this. Stuff
especially
like,
the off season.
Especially the off season. Because you know, this is something another Saint Twitter legend, that boy Wolf, pointed out. It's not like free agency has been crazy. You know, it's been kind of whack for us this year. It's been kind of quiet. We're not seeing, you know, Jarius Bird posted up in Mickey Loomis's office in the jean shirt. It's been kind of quiet, and so I'm wondering
it
what's
has,
going on.
But it's also I would say it's been a fascinating offseason. Just it was more the chat, like watching Mickey do his magic, the Loomis math, and watching how he was going to get us under the cap. And I feel like he did a good job, but like, how would you say he did as far, I mean, I feel like he minimized losses and he did a really good job of getting us to a point where, I mean, there's maybe a couple people I wouldn't have wanted to lose, but you know, you were going to have to.
Yeah. So if you hold it to me, it could have been much worse because in context adds a lot to the situation here. If you hold up the depth chart that they had in February against the one they have now, it's pretty distressing. I mean, we have lost a lot of starters. They've lost, I think PFF had it at like 4,699 snaps have been lost from last year in the players that they've had to release as cap cuts, guys who have left as free agents. But that's a lot of space to fill, and a lot of new faces are going to be bringing in. But it could have been much worse. And if you look at the exact players that left, you know, it's a lot of guys in their 30s. It's a lot of guys coming off of injuries, guys with injury histories. It's a lot of players who probably weren't long for New Orleans. And some of those players would be here if salary cap. Yeah, Jared Cook. I'm a firm believer that if the salary cap had stayed flat, it wouldn't have been, the bloodletting would not have been nearly as drastic as it was.
Totally.
Yeah. I mean, guys like
we wouldn't have lost Jackrabbit, right? Yeah. Jinx.
Yeah, bingo. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Malcolm Brown. That's another one that, you know, mm-hmm. we might have been able to keep around for a while. But when the cap, you know, instead of climbing 10 million, it takes a 13 million plummet or whatever it was, 16, I forget. You have to make tough calls, and that's happening around the league. And that's something I think the Saints are going to start taking advantage of in the days ahead, because right now, if nothing else changes right now, they're projected to have 17 draft picks over the next 2 years. Between compensatory picks.
Cleveland, was it them or Cincinnati or somebody that gobbled up a bunch of draft picks by just playing like NBA style offseason? Was it Minnesota?
Minnesota. They had like 14 draft picks last year. They had to cut a couple of them.
And they upgraded this year. Who went over there from here? I thought somebody.
Well, they got Patrick Peterson.
LSU. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. No, I don't like that either. I really hope we don't run into him because, you know, Mike Zimmer's defense got Alvin Kamara on Christmas Day, but Mike Zimmer is a great coach. And I think that if anybody is going to turn Pat Pete back into a top 10 corner, I think he's the one to do it. So I'm intrigued to see how that works out.
Oh, you didn't know? Your ass better call somebody.
Did a show. What's your number?
Oh, I'm probably about a good 5 or 6.
Ooh, did you just get back from the Pelicans game?
No, but I watched it on television and we beat the Lakers. I don't tweet a ton, but when I have a few drinks and play the Lakers and I get pissed, I mean, look, I know. I've had season tickets for a long time. I've been to so many games where it's filled with NOLA Laker fans or Cleveland fans or Miami fans, you know, whoever LeBron plays and who the Lakers are, they always get very excited when they leave with a loss. So I was very excited that we beat you. out of the
nine. Lakers.
Yes.
It's almost like you should do a podcast on the Pelicans, Jason.
We're doing one tomorrow morning.
Okay.
Ben and I are going to do it. Finally, we're going to do a Pelican plunge tomorrow morning.
Good deal. Good deal. All right. So we have Jason, John, Jason. Good to meet each other. Okay.
Got it.
Howdy. I'm a crime donkey on everything. I'm sure everything's Twitter. I know Twitter's been a fire the last few days, but you know, I'm crime donkey on Twitter. I don't post a ton, but when I have a few drinks, I tend to post a little bit. But I try to, you know, I try not to post too much because I end up getting drunk and tweeting it, and I wake up the next morning, it's like, oh shit, please tell me I didn't say something stupid. Yeah.
That's why he doesn't have the login to the Dome Patrol podcast Twitter account.
Yes, I just leave that to the other two. I just leave that to the other two idiots you've been talking to.
Yeah. Right. Okay. That's why you get horrible
Jason. Jason, John's a big Aaron Brooks guy.
Look, I've been a season ticket holder since 2003. So wait, I've talked myself into multiple Saints quarterbacks, including Aaron Brooks. You know, I talked myself into Aaron Brooks, and look, for the longest time, they made fun of me, but before Drew Brees, he was the only Saints quarterback to win a playoff game. Back in the day, that's all we had to hang our hope on was Aaron Brooks. And look, he was a good quarterback. He had his issues, and it got frustrating. But you still can't deny that before this era that we've been blessed with the past 15 years that we talked about, he was the best, you know. I mean, he was the only Saints quarterback to win a playoff game.
Yeah, Drew. Hey, man, Aaron Brooks is QB2 all time in the Saints for me.
Right?
You know, it wasn't Archie's records that Drew broke, and it wasn't Bobby's records that Drew broke, and it wasn't any Billy Joseph's records that Drew broke either. It was Aaron Brooks. So, right. We definitely need to link up, and salute to the legend, Aaron Brooks, one of these days.
I knew it. I'm surrounded by assholes.
All right, but let's talk about 2022. John, you tweeted earlier today that you hope we draft on Nuzorberty. I don't even know how to say his name.
Shoth Murray?
Yeah, pardon me?
I said I've never even heard of something like that.
A Nuzor.
How do you? My question is like, why?
Washington. Yeah. Washington defensive tackle, Levi Onwuzurike.
Yeah, like we already have Onyemata. Yeah. I mean, what are you trying to do to the broadcasters?
look, man, if I really want to throw you let me see, who am I thinking of? Adetokunbo, Ogundehi.
Amana Nua? Didn't we have a guy named like Amana Nua?
Manamana. Manamana. Manamana.
That was a great year. We had a lot of Polynesian players on the team. We had Paoli Kikaha. We had We had Michael.
Humananui. That was it. Michael Humananui, the tight end. Michael
Who Man.
Yeah. Yep. Oh, yeah, the Who Man, the famous trade compensation for Akeem Hicks, man himself. We've got some names, but man, and Luzurike, you know, go watch this dude. This guy is awesome.
And you believe he was a legitimate option? Like he will legitimately possibly fall to us?
Well, I think we might be the beginning of his range. Because everywhere I'm reading, they're describing him as a top 40 prospect. And what that means is he's somebody who can probably expect to go in the 30s, possibly the late 20s, because 40 would be his floor in this case. So you got to say, okay, how high is his ceiling? Well, if he's a top 40 prospect, then he's probably not a top 20. So closer to 30 than 40 would be my guess there. And so he's someone where the Saints have been fortunate to land guys. They ranked in their top 15 when they've been picking at the end of the first round lately. Ryan Ramczyk was a top 15 prospect. Cesar Ruiz was allegedly a top 15 prospect for them.
He
didn't look like it last year. If they don't have one of those top shelf blue chip prospects available, then they're going to start looking at their second tier, and that's where guys like Onwuzurike are going to come into play. Now, for him specifically, he's a really interesting player because he played nose tackle at Washington. But physically, he is a lot like Sheldon Rankins, where he's a sub 300-pound rusher. He's like 294, 297, something like that. But he is just crazy productive as a pass rusher. He was, for PFF, he was the nation's most efficient pressure rate, nose tackle, whatever that is, lining up head over the center. Nobody had a better pressure rate than him this year.
Oh, I like
so
that.
So he's somebody that you can take. And again, he's like 6'2", 6'3", right, a hair under 300 pounds. Send him to Smoothie King a couple times a week and he'll get there. So he's somebody that we can take in. You can plug into the defense because this is something I've been looking at is the snaps lost from last year. Three defensive tackles played 400 or more snaps for the Saints last year. David Onyemata led them all. Mm-hmm. Sheldon Rankins was number two. And Malcolm Brown was number three. Yeah, two of those top three are gone. So you can say, okay, Shy Tuttle, you're getting bumped up into a top three spot on Yamada.
It's a lot of production for Tuttle and Roach to make up or something.
It is. Well, so Tuttle was at like 360 something.
I'm having trouble hearing you.
So, yeah, Tuttle.
He said Tuttle. And
yeah. So Tuttle had 360 something, so it's not as big a jump for him as you might think. Because remember, Rankins lost a lot of time to injury last year. So you could totally they can coexist. And I know the coaches love Tuttle; they want him to play more often. But you can totally work out a rotation where Onyemata is still your lead dog defensive tackle. Tuttle is getting the reps that he's earned, and then you can bring in this rookie, you know, whether it's Luis Enrique or somebody else. And say, hey, just go nuts. You're our DT3 to start out with. We'll see how it goes. See who plays the run better, who plays the pass better, and we'll retool it as the season continues. But they can make a difference early on.
It's a position that a rookie can come in and make a difference in it in their first year.
Exactly.
Instead of like tight end or something.
The thing about Tuttle, Tuttle, he's not aggressive enough for me. He's a little too shy.
Throw
my dad joke actually. In there.
I mean, look, in fairness, he did have the greatest stiff arm in Atlanta Falcons history. So
He does.
The greatest interception return in Atlanta Falcons history.
That's right.
Eat that, Deion Sanders.
I made a gift of that. Deion Sanders. How much would Sue cost? Yeah. And do you want Sue? Because if you get Sue, you're probably not going to draft an Asawadiri.
Anuzarike.
That's going to be.
There you go. You nailed it.
All right. Yeah, so you know what I mean? I don't know that I want Sue.
Well, I don't think that we can afford Sue, but my big question is, look, we've had so many losses this year in free agency just because of the way that the salary cap dropped. And I've been on record saying I really think the NFL should have artificially inflated the cap like the NBA did during COVID because, look, they lost money this year with no fans, but the money's going to come back. We saw it with the TV NBA contracts that they just – that they're signed, like they're coming up, like the money is coming. It forces a handful of teams to have to shed a bunch of guys. And I get it from the owner's perspective because the NFL owners have always been about profit. They don't care about, you know, not that a bunch of owners care about players, but the NFL owners really do not give a shit about the players. They're about their bottom line. So even though they say they lost money, I'm sure every team still made a small profit.
Cut it as much as they did.
It just wasn't their big profit, but it's going to force a lot of these teams, like the Saints, like some other teams, to have to shed a bunch. And it's going to squeeze, like, you know, and with free agency, you know, it's crazy some of the dollars that went out this past week in free agency. Yeah, there's still some money to spend, but at the end of the day, there's going to be a lot of really good players that are going to sign for small deals.
That's why everybody's signing one-year deals right now.
Right, because they know like the money is going to go up. They got some ease this year, but the money is going to go up eventually. Right. But for this year, it's going to be a pinch. And so there should be some really solid players to come. But still, as you know, the Saints, luckily, you know, we actually got some comp picks this year, which I don't even know what that means, but we actually got some comp picks this year. But they will have to hit on a lot of these guys this year. So there's a lot of positions of need now that we had to cut so many guys. Like, we need a defensive tackle. We need a cornerback. We still may draft a receiver. I mean, there's an offensive line that we're probably going to have to draft.
So, you know, speaking of cornerback, like, what are we going to do about this? Because I have, like, PTSD with, like, P-Rob and Patrick, or what was his name? Crowley. PJ Williams or Crowley. Yeah, like,
hey. P-Rob played well last year, man.
He didn't have to be the guy. He was a third. Like, we losing Jack Rabbit is a big deal. That's why I kind of think, like, man, yeah, like, we, the best way to replace it depended on, you know, it's all dependent on who's there when we pick, but it's like, we're going to have to, I think we're going to have to draft a cornerback pretty early just because we don't have the money to sign any kind of free agent.
Yeah, and I would like to see them do that because we don't know what the future of that position is. You know, is Marshawn Lattimore about to get paid $100 million?
Ooh,
because he's a free agent after this year, and that's kind of what we're staring down the barrel of. So it's like, you know, we need some kind of a long term fix, or at least something that looks like a long term fix. So I do think they're going to draft a corner, if nothing else, just looking at trends, because, you know, they typically do draft a couple defensive backs every year, no matter how many picks they have. It's just a position that they value fresh legs at, and I think that's a smart approach. Even if those guys turn out to be, you know, Corey White or Stanley Sheen, that piece every now and then, you level that out by getting a Marshawn Lattimore, by getting a PJ Williams, who does stick around for a couple of years as a backup, and that's okay. But, you know, I do anticipate them adding a free agent corner at some point, probably not an expensive one, just because of how the finances are going to shake out. But, you know, if we look at who the Saints have been connected to in free agency, it's several corners. We know that they were in on Chidobe Awuzie, the former Cowboys corner, scouted, drafted, and developed by Chris Richard, the new Saints secondary coach. He got a pretty nice deal with the Bengals, so he's off the board. But the Saints were in the running for him. We know that they've explored bringing in Richard Sherman. That's another guy that Richard has worked with in Seattle with the Legion of Boom. I don't know that I like that idea because, to me, I mean, Richard Sherman is a lot more like Champ Bailey at this point in his career whenever he joined the Saints. So
I'm definitely against him. He's Champ Bailey. He's Brandon Browner. He's like, I'm definitely out on, I'm out on Sherman. Like, he's not going to be what he was. Like, he's done. As far as I'm concerned, as a corner, he's done.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of what he's coming to grips with now, too, because I don't think his market was what he anticipated it being. But, I mean, when you're on the wrong side of 30, when you were hurt last year, you're not going to get a lot of money. So we'll see how it shakes out with him. But just looking around the league, I do think the Saints are going to add a veteran corner at some point. I don't know who it will be, but, you know, just looking at the names they've been attached to, it wouldn't shock me if it's somebody who already knows Chris Richard's tendencies, his system, somebody he worked with in Dallas or Seattle. That just kind of seems to be the way the wind is blowing, you know?
Well, so, John, yeah, do you have, as part of your job, I guess, do you have a little more insight or understanding or insider knowledge, and that's more for lack of a better word, into maybe how the Saints front office thinks and or is, or what they're thinking? You know, like, are your opinions based on maybe you're better at reading the tea leaves because you have more access to those tea leaves? Because, like, you know, with us, you know, we're reading what's being reported by people like you, and you say a name like Richard Sherman or Malcolm Butler, we're going to react to that. Or if you think, like, it's maybe something else, like, what's more
kind
realistic?
I don't cultivate sources the way that guys like Nick Underhill does, for example, with the New Orleans Death Football. But I do have, you know, these databases that I built up over time where I can look and I can see, you know, what are the Saints' tendencies in free agency, in the draft? How do they structure contracts? What are the athletic testing measurements that they pay attention to with draft prospects? What are the eliminating factors that they consider? When do they make exceptions for these guys? And so I can kind of reverse engineer a lot of what they do. It's not a perfect system by any means. Just as an example.
It's like analytics.
It's more data-driven.
Analytics. Exactly. And the Saints have taken a very data-driven approach. And, you know, both in how they manage the salary cap and how they evaluate draft prospects. Jeff Ireland did a ton to introduce that. And I think that's why they've had so many successful early round draft picks over the last few years, by nailing those. So, but you know, as far as me having sources on the team and anything like that, that's not my bag. That's not what I get up to. And I'm definitely trying to avoid misleading anybody by making them think that I know someone on Airline Drive who's texting me on the sly or anything like that.
Right. That makes sense. So I'm going to jump over now, tight end, something else. You kind of mentioned that drafting a guy may not really be feasible. And then you also mentioned in your article that you said it's not feasible because the position, and maybe especially the way Sean Payton designs his offense, it's maybe a little bit easier to get somebody with experience to come in here. Like, what do you honestly think is going to happen with tight end? Because I kind of agree, like, it's a lot to ask of Troutman. And I mean, who else? Who's the other guy?
Taysom Hill.
Garrett Griffin and Ethan Wolf.
Yeah, right.
Practice squad legends, man.
Right. I am all in on real big fish. Like,
everybody's doing the fish. Yeah.
FYI.
Everybody's doing the fish. Yeah.
I love this town.
Everybody's doing the fish. Yeah. Everybody's doing the fish.
The big fish, man. I think he's got a very bright future. And he's a player where the Saints went against their tendencies to draft. They like him that much. You know, they looked at his athletic testing. He had a slow 40-yard dash, and they overlooked that, added him anyway, and it looks like it's going to work out. So that's an example of them not being, you know, so dogmatic in how they consider analytics and how they use them. But as for what they're going to do, look around the market. I think there's a lot of players who might appeal to them. Guys like Tyler Eifert, Darren Fells out of Houston. This is something to consider as the Saints move into free agency.
Well, Fells might jump for the league minimum just to get out of that shit show.
I wouldn't blame him, man. But something to consider is the comp pick formula. And that's a little complex, but the way it works is the more players you lose than you gain, depending on how much they signed for, you get compensatory draft picks in the next year's draft. Right now, the Saints are expected to get either a third or a fourth for Trey Hendrickson, a fifth for Sheldon Rankins, and potentially more. We'll see how it shakes out.
So you mean you might lose one of those picks if you sign another player for X amount of dollars? Because you gained a player.
That's where it gets complicated.
And yeah, like that's where I go cross-eyed when I think of comp picks.
Yeah, so that's where it gets a little more complex. The only players who qualify to count against the comp picks that you expect to get are players whose contracts expired straight up with the team that they're leaving. If they're an unrestricted free agent from another team, for example, if the Saints had signed Jonnu Smith, that would wipe out the comp pick that they would get for Rankins or Hendrickson because he was an unrestricted free agent. However, if they sign Darren Fells out of Houston, because the Texans cut him, he will not count into the comp pick formula.
Okay.
And you can sign the player, you keep your pick, and that's
so
the way to
that
work
goes
around
into
it.
Your analytical probability equation that a Fells would be a more likely scenario if you're thinking like the Saints might be thinking about, I don't want to lose my comp picks.
Exactly.
Here's a guy that's been cut. And if talent-wise and money-wise and, you know, other things being equal, they'll take a guy being cut, then try and, trade for a guy or grab a free agent.
That's a bingo. Right. Now, And so that's the way I would go about it, and that might be the way they're leaning. I think that they've been so quiet in free agency so far because they might be waiting for the spending to settle down a bit and for these guys who have been cut by other teams to kind of swallow their pride a little bit and say, okay, fine, I'll play for the minimum this year, hope to cash in next year. And that's whenever the Saints might start making more moves. So it makes sense to me. I don't know if that's their thinking.
It seems like a lot of players are doing that, especially this year, at least signing one-year deals in hopes that, you know, next year they can kind of cash in once the salary cap goes up.
Yeah, so in the way the cap is going to rise, we're not getting this new TV money until 2023, but we are expecting it to go up a bit in 2022. So the thinking is, okay, we have a lean year in 2021. 2022 will be a little bit better. And then it's going to get crazy in 23. And that's whenever the big money is going to hit. That's when the cap is going to go to the moon. And that's when the Saints are probably going to really start retooling and adding some big names again. So
we're going to be kind of trying to win through the draft, really, and some deal picks, value picks, or value signings.
Right. And so if you look at the players they have under contract in future years, they've only got 30 people on the team in 2022. They've got enough to fill the roster right now for 21. 22, that they've only got 30 out of 53 roster spots filled. So they need to hit on these draft picks. They need to add some value picks, some value free agents. That's why I think they're being a little more conservative in free agency, because they're thinking, okay, if we bide our time, if we can bring in extra draft picks down the line, then we can add guys on the cheap to fill out our roster, and then we can really retool and be competitive again. So we'll spend this year, we'll let Jameis have it and see how he does. We'll evaluate the roster. We'll keep our core together of, you know, our Ramcheks, our Lattimores, our Teron Armsteads. We'll keep these guys together, and we'll see where Jameis can take us. And then we'll go crazy once we get to the other side of this thing. So that's my read on the situation.
And that's the big elephant in the room, I guess, right? That I'm surprised we went this long without talking about the quarterback situation. So real quick, I'll say, though, and maybe it's a good thing because that's like the only thing people talk about. What do you think of Jameis Winston? Do you believe in him? Are you going to overlook the one stat that's against him, which is the 30 interceptions that he threw under a different coach in a completely different situation, and maybe have hope that, hey, he's going to have the 1 year to prove himself. Scott thinks, you know, it's one and done. He'll be, you know, should be replaced by Taysom Hill.
Like Taysom Hill, but I think Jameis at least deserves a shot I think he's going to be starting quarterback. I've said that all offseason. Everybody's talking about Watson and Wilson and all these people, and I've all offseason, Winston will be our starter next year.
So, but my thing is, I'm choosing to believe, that's what it's blind faith. I'm choosing to believe, and maybe it's blind hope, that Jameis is going to play so well that we're going to get a good 10 years of greatness. He's not going to be Drew Brees great. Nobody can be Drew Brees great. But I think what if we do have one of those like Montana to Young or Favre to Rodgers scenarios? And could Jameis be one of those guys? Am I crazy?
And he has Aaron. He has Aaron Brooks' old number, so you know that's
a positive. Well, that means John loves him.
But man,
you can dust off the old number two.
I'll be happy. Exactly. So my thing with Jameis is, I want to believe that he's cleaned up the mistakes, that he's protecting the ball better, not just with the interceptions. Go back and look. He fumbled like 50 times in 5 years. It was something crazy. I want to believe that he can do a better job of protecting the football in an offense that's not going to say no risk it, no biscuit, and then get mad at him when he risks it too much, the way Bruce Arians did. I really want to think that he's going to be a more effective quarterback in New Orleans,
you trust – because I kind of trust Sean Payton to design – an offense around Jameis's strength. You know, again, and I said this in our one of our last episodes, but I'll say it for your sake, John. Like, I feel like when Teddy had to come in to fill in for Breeze, or when Taysom did last year to fill in for Breeze when they were hurt, they're still playing Drew Breeze's offense. You know, so it didn't play to a little modified version maybe for him, but like now we have a complete offseason practice, everything. What kind of an offense is Sean Payton going to design? How's it going to be different besides deep passes? And maybe that's the one difference. But you know what I mean? Like, I trust Sean Payton to work a magical offense with Jameis Winston's talents. And if they're not lying to us, he's got a brain.
Yeah, well, so Jameis knowing the sport that's not a question. If he was described as the next Peyton Manning coming out of college because of how thoroughly he understands football, how just his knowledge of, like, schematically and how playbooks are designed and how routes complement each other, all this minutiae, he knows that playbook front to back. The issue is heat of the moment decision making, whether he's going to put the ball in a spot where only his man can get it, or whether he's not, or whether he's going to maybe lack that touch and put it somewhere where the DB can make a play on it.
Is that athletic finesse? It
could be, and you know, that's something that Cam Newton has kind of struggled with as well, where he hasn't really improved. Technically, like, his throwing motion hasn't really changed since he got in the NFL. But at the same time, Cam is 30. Jameis is like 25, 26, I think. So you have to think he still has time to change. And that's kind of the issue with Taysom Hill as well, is Taysom is maxed out. Like, Taysom, he's not going to get younger. He's not going to get more experience than he already has. You know, he's going to begin to decline at some point. And so that's why you look at Jameis and you say, okay, here's a guy who was the number one draft pick, who's mentally the next Peyton Manning because of his understanding of the game and his ability to, you know, draw it up and hopefully go execute it. But he's got these flaws with ball security and with decision making that, you know, got him kicked out of Tampa Bay. And so I do think the offense is going to look different. Like you said, what we've seen the last few years with Taysom and Teddy Bridgewater, that was the Breeze offense. That was the ball control, lots of play action passing, lots of running on first down. That was a let's control the pace. Let's not do anything to lose this game. With Jameis, you have somebody who can stretch the field in ways none of those quarterbacks can, and he's somebody who. I think we're going to see a career year on a Traquan Smith. He's the player I look at more than anyone else.
I'm thinking Deontay Harris is going to have a big year too with his speed.
I think Deontay will. I just question if his body can hold up to it, because he's had 2 years in the NFL and he's been hurt in both of them.
So
and I hate to hold that against him, but at the same time, it's like there's a very short list of players of his stature who have had long careers. But Traquan is the guy to me to watch. He's the one I think he can be Jameis's Chris Godwin. Because if you look at what Traquan Smith was doing in college, go back to his UCF national champs, go back to that year and look at what he was doing. He was averaging 20 yards a catch that season.
I'm all in on Traquan too. Like, if there was somebody had, I think it was Dave from the BS and Beer Saints podcast shared a stat with us that, and you might know about this too, if they graded him on passes thrown to him versus passes thrown to the other receivers, and it's almost like the QBR for whoever was throwing was the highest when throwing to Traquan versus anybody else. And I can't remember if that was like on the Saints only or if that was across like the NFL or something, but like Traquan pretty much, I guess it's to say that he caught everything, right? And I'm looking at that now.
That's a Pro Football Reference stat. So if you look at it, Traquan, among all Saints players,
okay.
He had a QB rating of 122.7 when he was targeted. That's third highest on the team, and he had the most catches or most targets out of the top three. So Number one is Austin Carr. He was only thrown to four times. That's an outlier. Let's throw that out. Number two, Adam Trautman. You know, he was, and that's Big encouraging, Fish. But he was only thrown to Big Fish. Big Fish was only targeted 16 times last season. Traquan was thrown to 50 times. So if you look at all the Saints players who were thrown to 50 times or more last season, Traquan leads the whole group in QB rating. So he's somebody who's very effective. Reliable. He makes the most of his opportunities. Reliable. He scored like four or five touchdowns every year he's played.
And he blocks run blocks really well.
He blocks. What was the phrase? Sean Payton talked about that last year before training camp. The phrase he used is that Traquan has an attitude to go do things that physically that a lot of players don't have an appetite for. Mm. Whether that's making a tough catch over the middle, whether that's blocking for a teammate, a lot of the same qualities that Marcus Golston had back in the day, where he was kind of willing to take the hit to help the team, and you know. Traquan hasn't gotten to do a lot of the things that he's great at with this version of the Saints offense. He hasn't gotten to be used on these post routes and corners and flag routes. He hasn't gotten to do a lot of that with Breeze and Teddy and Taysom. Jameis is going to let it rip. And, you know, just look at the trick play against the Bears. Against the Bucks, because they copied it from the Bears. Where Jameis hit him for the, 56-yard TD. I think we're going to see a lot of that. Because Traquan does have that vertical ability. He's shown it in college. He's shown it
with Michael Thomas being back, too.
That's going to be huge. And, you know, Michael Thomas, I think he's waking up every day and watching Carlton Davis film, just getting ready for that rematch. So Michael Thomas is back. Big Fish is going to be featured more heavily. And Traquan is the guy I think is going to benefit the most out of the group just from having Jameis in there as somebody who's going to give him more chances further downfield.
See, and I say like with them, plus we haven't even said Kamara, with all the offensive weapons. I mean, if Jameis can't succeed with all these weapons and Sean Payton as his coach, then I don't think he's going to succeed in the NFL.
Yeah, I think that's very valid.
I mean, and that's the other thing. I mean, the 1 year deal, I think some people talk about it like a 1 year to test him out, which is yes, but also I think he signed in the 1 year the same way a lot of other players are. Like, we can't afford a big contract for him. So, okay, I'll take a little less right now. That's the team player move. And then I'll prove myself. And then next year, you're going to pay me. You're going to pay me a lot.
Yeah, and if the Saints aren't going to pay him, then you can bet that Chicago and Pittsburgh will.
Right.
He's going to have a more favorable market next year. And I think he's in a great position to really showcase himself and showcase that development that you know, we're being led to believe that it has happened behind the scenes in practice.
But the more he talks in interviews, like today, the one he posted about Drew Brees, and he got emotional talking about the Katrina year, watching the Super Bowl championship and all that stuff. Like, the more he talks and I watch him, the more I like him. You know what I mean? Like, I can see him being a leader in the team. And I think that's what, you know, we've heard stories from people from Tampa Bay saying, like, the city loved him. The city loved him through all those years, even though, you know, they didn't win. But I mean, how can you expect to win? You're playing against the Saints twice a year. You know?
Right. Well, Jameis, I mean, and that was something we heard early on when he got to New Orleans was, oh, man, everybody loves him, like, in the facility. Like, he knows the janitor's names. He knows the people doing the COVID testing in the trailer in the parking lot every day. I mean, he's very personable, very charismatic, despite his goofy tendencies and body language, throwing kettlebells around. He is, like, a genuinely good dude to a lot of these people in that working environment. And we heard that in Tampa Bay as well. Like, whenever he left Tampa, he went and I remember reading it from, I think it's Jenna Lane, who's the ESPN Nation reporter for Tampa Bay. Jameis went through the whole building and shook hands and hugged everybody, every employee that he ran across on his way out. I don't think that's an issue. I don't think we have to worry about him, like, not being embraced by the locker room or anything like that.
Right.
Like, look at last year, whenever he's, you know, high-fiving everybody on their way through the sidelines when they're rotating in and out of the lineup.
That's what I'm saying. I think he's a natural. I think he's a leader. I think he's got that. He's got right that charisma because it's genuine, or at least I believe that it is. Scott doesn't. He thinks it's all fake, and that he's, you know, Scott's just.
I don't think it's fake. I think that I honestly think that he'll play this year. I think next year we make a play for Russell Wilson. To be honest,
I would love to see it.
So wait, hold on. And if Jameis plays like so well, we go deep into the playoffs. Why would you want to give him up for an older Russell Wilson, where you've got more years with Jameis potentially if he proves himself? Let's say they end up having a same year between the two of them. Why wouldn't you keep the young guy?
Well, because you have a team now that can win, whereas, you know, Russell Wilson's been to a Super Bowl and won a Super Bowl. Jameis has not.
And to me, there's an element of catching lightning in a bottle with a great year from Jameis, where he goes out and he only throws 7 or 8 interceptions and he only fumbles 5 or 6 times. Like, that would be an aberration compared to the rest of his career. So you have to say, okay, is this who he is for the next 4 or 5 years, or is this who he was this year in this specific set of circumstances?
Him playing like, for do a we contract. Think this is repeatable?
And when he's playing in a contract year, expecting a Dak Prescott level payday at the end of it. I think those are things you have to consider. And if I'm paying him and Russell Wilson the same amount, give me Russ because he's proven he can do this year in and year out. Whereas with Jameis, you know, there's still all these questions surrounding it. But you know, it's going to be a heck of a nut to crack, and you know, I'm glad it's not my problem.
Right, we just get to talk about it. Right?
And it's kind of funny listening to Jeff talk about, oh, you know, I think Jameis is this, and I think Jameis is that. When he was with Tampa, you were saying the complete opposite.
Absolutely,
this guy's a clown. He's a goofball.
I didn't know him.
Oh, okay. So that's
now,
what
I said, the more I have access to him, the more I see him, the more I listen to him, the more I watch him, the more he's winning me over. I hated the whole W thing. I hated when he did it even this year with the win. And then until I actually watched it, and then I was like, okay, that was funny. He's making fun of himself. It was that moment that he started to endear himself to me. So yes, I was very much
anti-awareness.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, once he got some self-awareness, he became a much more appealable guy to cheer for and buy into. Whenever we saw him in Tampa, what was he doing? He was eating a W. He was slapping Marshawn Lattimore in the back of the head and starting a bench-clearing brawl on the sidelines in the middle of the game. He was doing goofy crap, and you know he was a problem.
He was a dumb kid.
Like you said, now we've got more Yeah, exactly. He was the same dude he was at Florida State, standing up and shouting obscenities in the cafeteria. I hate to read too much into these things because we don't know these guys personally. And right. I don't want to overstate it, but like if we look at where he is now, you know, he's married, he's got a kid, he's settled down. He's literally living in the suburbs, mowing his own grass. Like he's a different dude.
And
he went to the
School of Public Relations for a year. You know what I mean?
He did. He learned how to curate his Instagram feed. He learned not to give interviews to Yahoo Finance.
Not to invest in diamonds.
All
not
I want is
not to invest in the LED light up diamonds.
If we make the playoffs, you know how like Reggie ran out with the bat that one year? I need Winston to run out just holding some crab legs.
That would be epic.
Oh my god.
That would be awesome.
That would make me laugh.
What we need him to get like it wasn't Muses, it may have been Knicks. It was one of the crews had like this huge like king crab one year. He needs to get one of those like 8 foot long, one of the like 8 foot long paper mache crab legs come running out, holding it over his head. that's what we need to see.
That's awesome. That is excellent. I love it. And eat it.
Crack it open on the sideline and just go ham.
That's right. All right. Well, we are pretty much at time. I'm going to forego final thoughts. This has been absolutely fantastic, John. Thank you. I want to thank you for joining us and giving us a whole lot of insight. I think a really good understanding. I really like your style of that, you know, again, like rather than like that insider, like just somebody tell me what they're going to do. You're actually looking at all the data and you're analyzing and predictive analysis. And I really,
I don't know if we can have him back. He's just too smart for this show, is what
he really is.
Too much intelligence to the show.
We're usually very lowbrow, man.
What are you doing, Rafi?
Oh, God. Since I left you guys, I was tracking the bear most of the night. Didn't get him. But I did find a big, fresh pile of shit that I thought I'd second harvest because it was full of Hershey Kisses. Spoiler alert, they weren't Hershey Kisses. It was just more shit. I ate it all anyway, got sick to my tummy, puked, pooped, and now I'm here with you bros. What have you guys been up to?
Let me get fart my jokes over a couple times, and I'll get lowbrow with the two.
Yeah, we'll do it. Well, we'll record on like a weekend, and when you can really drink.
There you go. That's right. Thanks for the opportunity, man. Thank you all for having me on the show. I surely appreciate it.
Absolutely glad you were able to do it. And so, if people do want to read your stuff, they go to it's saintswire.usatoday.com. It is the USA
saintswire.com. We'll get you there too.
Saintswire.com will get you. That's an easier way to do it. If they want to follow you, they can follow you on Twitter at John_Sigler. That's SIGLERR, two R's. I guess the another John Sigler.
The one was taken. I can't believe it.
I was wondering about that. All right. And then for the rest of us, that is all the show we have for you right now. We're going to thank our loyal listeners for downloading each week and telling all of your friends about the Dome Patrol United network of podcasts, where you only have to subscribe to one feed to receive multiple podcasts, including the 2-Point Conversion Instant Reaction Show, which runs during the Saints season, the Dome Patrol podcast, that's this show, the BS and Beer Saints podcast with Dave Romero, the Pelican Plunge that Jason says he's going to record tomorrow, the Premier League podcast from our UK brethren, Taking the Over with Billy Gunn, who's from your neck of the woods, John, and the Tiger's Den, hosted by Scott, who's been on this show right there. Follow everybody on Twitter at Dome Patrol PCast, Dome Patrol UK, at BSN Beer Media, at Taking the Over, and at Tiger_podcast. Follow us on Facebook for live streams. Just search for Dome Patrol Podcast. And if you want to listen to us the old-fashioned way, go to DomePatrolPodcast.com. Say bye-bye, donkeys.
Bye-bye, Jackrabbit. Good night, Houdat Nation. Thank you.